What's happening, everyone? This is another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined by A. Sherrod Blakely, back from L.A., back from All-Star break. Looking tan, my friend. I'm sure you enjoyed L.A. I know it all a grind.
You know, the tan is definitely in full effect. So, obviously, that's been quite a bit of time out in the sun working on that.
Hey, we're going to talk about your exploits out there in L.A. coming up in a minute, but I got to remind you, we're in the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee, just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. Coming up today on the Celtics Talk Podcast, I sit down with Brad Stevens to talk about his All-Star break, what he was able to do, and his career in baseball and how it just didn't end quite like he wanted. Sherrod, funny story for Brad coming up. But first, how you feeling, bro? You back? 23 games left in the season. All-Star break is done.
I'm ready to get this going. I mean, I want to get this regular season out of the way. Let's get to the playoffs so that we can get to the games that we really care about, and that is the playoff push. That's what this season is about for the Celtics. It's great to have a really good regular season record because it helps with seeding. But it's all about the playoffs, Drapes. You know that.
It is all about the playoffs, and it's all about that seeding, too. I mean, the Cavs are coming on. Toronto's doing their thing. So if you're the Celtics, I mean, you don't want to slip down to third where potentially in the second round you got to open up on the road. We'll talk about all that, of course, in the coming weeks. But one thing Brad Stevens talked about at practice on Thursday is just finally getting guys back in the lineup, getting healthy. You added Greg Monroe. Now you got Marcus Smart coming back Friday in Detroit. How much did they miss this guy? I think they missed him, you know, tremendously, and not obviously for scoring and stuff you can see in the box score, but just his fight, just his intangibles that they've missed the last month or so.
There's only so much distance you're going to cover when you've got that dummy tire in place of the real tire. At some point, it's just not going to give you the same mileage, the same ability to navigate that you're used to. And, you know, the Celtics, they've done a good job of really masking when guys have gone out with injuries. But ultimately, they need those guys back to playing the way they can. And Marcus Smart is a big part of what this team is about. And we talk a lot about his defense. But I think we tend to gloss over the fact that he's become a hell of a playmaker this year compared to where he was a year ago or a couple years before that. So his all-around game, I thought they really missed not only in terms of what he brings in terms of impact, but also his ability to change the game up a little bit, to give them kind of those momentum-changing plays that, frankly, when you take him out of the mix, you take Shane Larkin out of the mix, who's also been out, those are two of your better players at changing the game's momentum. And when you don't have those guys for an extended period of time, which the Celtics haven't had them, it's going to catch up to you, and I thought it did in those last four or five games. Now those guys, Marcus will be back. Shane is probably going to be back, if not against the Detroit game, certainly within the next week or so. That gives them the opportunity to be the team that we've seen go on really great winning streaks.
Yeah, and the thing about Marcus, you know, late in games, he's the guy that makes the play, you know. Kyrie will get you the buckets, we know that. But if you need a defensive stop, draw a charge, something, a rebound, Marcus Smart, more times than not, is that guy that can do that. And so, you know, if you talk to Al Horford, if you talk to the guys on the team, they'll tell you Marcus Smart is really the heart and soul. Kyrie's the best player. He's the leader. Yeah. But in terms of the heart and soul, is Marcus Smart. And I think they've missed that, you know. Terry Rozier's done a great job filling in, getting more minutes. I think it's going to be key for him to continue that and playing that way when Marcus comes back. But, you know, the heart and soul, they missed that the last month.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Terry Rozier, nice spare tire to throw out there and give you some good miles.
Why are you calling my man a spare tire? Don't be doing that. That's disrespectful.
No, it's not. It's keeping it real. All because right. Marcus Smart is one of the key wheels that makes this
sort of
engine
donut.
Go.
I called him a donut.
Hey,
come on, man.
Listen, Marcus is one of the key wheels that keeps this thing going. And Terry, and I love T. Rose. He's balling out when he got his opportunity. Much respect to him for that. But Marcus Smart is a little bit ahead of him in the pecking order.
Well, there's some talk, you know, do you throw Marcus in the starting lineup? What's Brad going to do? I wouldn't change the guard. Right. I wouldn't.
I don't like that idea because – first of all, that means someone's coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that starting lineup of the guys that you would consider. Let's see, Kyrie? No. Jaylen Brown? Ooh, that's a bad one. No. Nah. If anyone, it'd be Tatum. And I don't like the idea of him coming off the bench right now because I still think that I think he functions better with that first group.
Yeah.
I really do. I think they open things up for him, and I think if you put him on a second unit there's increased pressure on him to be that guy. And I know Brad tries to do that a little bit. And it didn't
really work. It hasn't worked. Yeah.
Right. And so to really do that with him starting and then maybe tweaking it a little bit just to give it a trial run with the second unit, and then to make that a part of your rotation where it's a definitive type thing, I just don't think he's ready for that.
No, I would keep the guard rotation the same. Maybe give some more minutes to Terry. But, you know, with Terry, his minutes have to be impactful.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be, you know, one night he has it, the next two or three he doesn't have it. I mean, we saw it when Kyrie was out and with Marcus out. Terry just has a bounce to his step, and he has to continue that.
It was definitely more noticeable when Kyrie was out because I think in Terry's mind, he thought, okay, let's see, that's 25 points, 5-6 assists that we got to make up for.
I'm going to get that.
I think I might be able to at least get an opportunity to put those numbers up. And I think it's very telling that, what, first game triple-double, second game career-high scoring?
Yeah,
I mean, you can't possibly script a better first and second NBA start than what Terry Rozier had. But that being said, he's got to figure out a way to do that coming off the bench. He's got to be that confident. He's got to have that swagger. He's got to have that, you know, that type of game, impactful game, coming off the bench, because that's the role he's in right now.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as Marcus Smart does come back, is he the cure-all, though?
Nah.
I mean, because, you know, everybody say, oh, once Marcus gets back, our defense will improve. That's asking a whole lot.
It is.
And I still think, you know, figuring out Greg Monroe's situation is key, too.
That, to me, is more important to figure out going forward, because the Celtics only made one move.
Right.
And that was signing Greg Monroe. And Greg and I, we had a long talk about that. And he admitted that there is a little pressure that he feels on himself because he's the only thing that's different. If this team went on a slide where they lost, like, they've got 23 games left, if they go 6-17, it doesn't matter, like, whether Kyrie plays well.
Right,
they're going to look at Greg because they're going to say, you know what,
before Greg Monroe and after Greg Monroe. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So he understands that he's got to make his presence felt. And, you know, offensively, it hasn't happened right away. But he made it clear to me that he's thinking more about helping them in whatever avenue they're asking him to. And I think early on is defense. And he's figured out real quick that if you play decent defense, Brad's going to play you. And if you look at his defensive numbers when he has played, they're comparable to what Baines has done. So if you're getting similar defense and you get better low post scoring?
Low post, yeah.
Now all of a sudden you got, and then if let's say he doesn't have it going on, you can come with Baines, who you know what he's going to bring defensively. So now all of a sudden.
So hold on, what are you talking? I'm trying to translate. See, I gotta translate Sherrod's speak here.
No, I have.
What I'm hearing is Greg Monroe can be starting.
Greg Monroe is going to start playing more than Baines. Okay. I don't know if he's going to start, but he's going to start playing more. And I think that's where what Brad was kind of hinting at, that he's going to tweak
the lineup
a little bit. He should play Monroe more. Well, he needs to know what the hell he's got to work with. I mean, give him Greg Monroe 10, 12, 14 minutes here. Come on. You have no idea what you're going to get out of him until you throw him out there. And I think the Detroit game, that's a great game. One, it's a team that he's familiar with, a player that he's been in the locker room with, he's competed against. And three, it's a legitimate
big. Aaron Baines has done a great job against Greg Monroe
which is why I'd start Baines.
Right.
But when I go with the second unit, I'm throwing Monroe out there. Because now Detroit has to make a decision. Do I let Drummond stay out there longer? Because they know what Greg can do. And Greg will look to bust them. He will look to get a double-double as quick as he can. So if they have to extend Andre Drummond, now all of a sudden, when he's got to deal with Baines, he's not going to have that same pop offensively. So now you've made him weaker at both ends of the floor because he's got to exert more energy trying to deal with Monroe, and he doesn't have as much energy to try to score on Baines.
Right. Well, we'll see on Friday what happens
there. I'm excited about Greg Monroe.
Are you really? You're fired
up. I am. You know, and
he's a Georgetown guy.
Which him
he
and I
busted had, your squad's butt
we had
a, time
we had
a, and time again.
We had some talks about that, and I made sure that he knew that I was a Syracuse guy after the interview. Just to make sure we get all the goods. But I think Greg's going to be good for this team. Right? He provides them exactly what they were looking for, and that's a big who can score on a block. I mean, because you look at Baines, most of his points is pick and pop.
Pick and pop. You wrote an article on NBCSportsBoston.com, a great article about Kyrie Irving. It's Kyrie's time, basically.
Oh, it is.
What do you mean by that?
Kyrie has done a great job of just really managing the game, managing the team, making sure that his young guys, as the season progressed, gain confidence, not only in terms of their play, but also in terms of winning. We're at that point now where it's like, okay, play time's over, big boy time, put your big boy pants on, and looking around, nobody got bigger pants on than mine. He has to be the leader of this team. He has to be, and when I say leader, I mean he has to take more control of games than we've seen, because the games are going to get harder. The teams that they're facing are going to be coming at them with much more vigor, because there's more on the line now. Teams are jockeying for playoff position. They realize every game matters, and you need your best player to be his best version of himself.
I agree. I want to see more from Kyrie, but what are we talking about? Are we talking James Harden? Russell Westbrook, LeBron, like, what are we talking about with Kyrie Irving?
We're talking about him dominating games. Now, Kyrie can give you 33 points, and it's like, wow, I only remember him. Right. He has to make more impactful plays. He has to put that team on his back. If they're going through a stretch where they're just not playing particularly well, he has to be the guy that gets them going. He has to be the catalyst. He has to be the one that jump starts what this team is going to do going forward, and how they're going to navigate their way through, I think, is a tough stretch here post-All-Star break, but definitely a number of winnable games.
And you know what? The thing with Kyrie, and I think this All-Star break has helped him. Before the break, I didn't think he was 100%. Like, I thought, you know, he'll get you his points, but in terms of, you know, just the way he was moving, I didn't like, you know, what I saw physically, because I didn't, you know, he still was getting you points, but it seemed like he had to work harder. What I want to see from Kyrie, though, is when he's on the floor, there's no doubt he's the best player on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I know you want to get Jaylen Brown off, you want to get Al Horford, but you know, when Kyrie's out there, if he's going to be an MVP caliber player, there can't be stretches where the Celtics forget about him. Mm-hmm. He has to have his imprint on each and every minute. We're talking about MVP candidates, the guys that we're mentioning. The Westbrooks, the Hardens, the Durants, they don't, you know, there aren't lulls in their game, you know. And I know Kyrie's, you know, letting the game come to him, playing within the system. But his impact on the game must be felt every time he's on there. And you know, one of the areas where I feel like the Celtics forget about him, first quarter he does his thing. They take him out. And then when he comes back in that second quarter, I want to see them go to him a lot more.
They don't do that.
And they don't, though. They don't, but Sherrod – there's a reason why they're down double figures in the second quarter each
and
game.
What mystifies me about that is that often when he comes back in a game, it's not like they're rolling. It's not like he comes back and they're on a 15-0 run.
Right.
It's usually sometimes the other way around. Right. And then when he's out there, I don't necessarily see the defense is making this huge adjustment to double-team him, blitz him. They play him straight up pretty much the first minute or two. And if they're playing him straight up the first minute or two, guess what?
He should bust
I'm getting him the damn ball so he can bust him in the first minute or two and force that defense to either change things up or keep getting just split, drilled.
But that's the thing. In the second half, when they're down, he comes out of the locker room and he's getting you buckets.
That whole team. There's something – that mentally stimulates them at halftime to the point where they realize, damn, you know what? Y'all ready to play now? Y'all ready? All right, let's go bust them. And for the life of me, I can't understand how could you not approach the actual game in first quarter like that, or even in the second quarter when you know it's a game that on a lot of nights is closer than it should be. I don't understand, and I know Brad doesn't understand either. How is it that you can have that killer mentality coming out of halftime, that sense of urgency that you should have every night, and it's just not there in the first half most games?
And it's not there. Let's go around the league a little bit, because All-Star break was this past weekend, and the commissioner, he talked about it, you know, perhaps changing the playoff format. Forget East versus West and East and West conference. Maybe just seeding them 1 through 16. I don't like that, Sherrod. I don't like that.
I like the idea from a conceptual standpoint, but then when you start looking at the matchups, like for example, if we went 1 through 16 right now, the Celtics would open the first round, I believe, against Portland
it was.
And so that doesn't really move me. I would much rather see them play Detroit. I'd much rather see them play Milwaukee. I'd much rather see them play Philly. There's greater interest when you have teams that have played, you know, more than twice a year. And when you go 1 through 16, you run the risk of just losing, I think, that appeal. And a team like the Miami Heat, for example, who right now would be in the playoffs, you go 1 through 16, they're not.
They would be out.
And so that's a market that I know the NBA damn well likes to see in the postseason because, you know, their fans may show up late, but guess what? They show up.
Yeah,
they eventually show up. So that's, to me, that's the issue why I don't think it will ever come to pass, because I think there will be enough teams that know that historically they're going to be in the bubble of getting in the playoffs. And why should I change this system up, risk not being in the playoffs, because we want – why exactly are we doing this?
Yeah.
Because it's not like the playoff format they have now sucks. In fact, it's pretty damn good. And the matchups, I think, are compelling. And that, to me, is what it ultimately has to come down to. Getting matchups that people give a damn about? And east side, west side, no matter which side you want to be on, I think there are a lot of compelling first-round matchups.
But I think a lot of people – you know, this year are talking about Houston and Golden State, and you know, those are clearly the two best teams in the league, and they'll be meeting up in the Western Conference Finals. So
maybe.
What? Maybe. Exactly. If that's the case, so what? You know, we've seen that in the past, and you cannot tell me that Cleveland Golden State, you know, has been a compelling matchup. Those have been compelling matchups. Matchups that the fans have wanted to see.
Right.
I don't think anybody really is clamoring for a Houston Golden State NBA Finals. I think the league loves having LeBron in the NBA
because
Finals.
Because if the playoffs went according to where teams are seated at the All-Star break, you'd have a Houston-Toronto final. That would be
they would not want that, the death blow. Yeah. Let's switch gears. Anthony Davis was on the jump, was asked about these comments. KG and Pierce had said. Pierce said that Garnett told him that his biggest regret was not leaving Minnesota sooner.
Mm-hmm.
When asked about that, Anthony Davis said, yeah, when you hear that, it makes you think. Not going to lie, it makes you think because you're wondering if you're following in that same path. Mm-hmm. But then again, you're like, oh, this could be the year. You don't know. So you've just got to take it year by year and just see where the team is going, what direction they want to go to, and just see where their head is.
So he just basically went on one side of the fence and then realized he was on that side of the fence. So, get back on the other one.
Because he also said if Boogie was healthy,
they'd go to the finals.
And I don't know if he really believes that
like
or
NCAA
not.
Tournament
you know.
Finals? NCAA finals.
But when you hear these comments, does that make you believe – that Davis leaving New Orleans is more likely than before?
I think he's open to the idea more so now than he's ever been. And to me, that's where it has to start. I don't think he's just going to wake up one morning and say, let me go ahead to practice. Actually, you know what? I don't want to practice with these guys anymore. I don't even want to play with them anymore. I don't think it's going to be that quick a transition. But I do believe that he's open to the idea. And that is where a team like the Boston Celtics, a team you know like San Antonio or whoever – you're going to start see teams inquire this summer more and more about him because they know, one, New Orleans may make the playoffs, and if they do, it's going to be a quick exit. There's just no way they're going to beat any of those top two or three
teams. But, Shirai, for Davis to get traded, he's going to have to say what you just said. He's going to have to demand his way out and say, I'm done with
this. I've said that time and time again, but here's the thing. He's going to be able to do it. And he's not going to catch nearly as much backlash as a lot of guys are because here's the thing. I've been here 5 years.
Right.
I've tried. I've
one
done
playoff
every,
series,
I've
maybe d- two. Yep.
I've done everything I can to for this franchise. And you know by trading me, you're going to get a hell of a
haul
in return.
Because I'm an Anthony Davis guy. He's my guy. But what message is this sending, first of all? How many years does a player have to – be with a franchise that doesn't win for him, for it to be acceptable for him to want to leave? This kid is only 24 years old, Sharad.
Yeah, but
so and now he's demanding, you know, let's say he does. It's okay for him to demand to be traded.
After 5 years?
What if after 3 years a guy says, you know what?
It ultimately comes back to the player. And I think if a guy after like 2 or 3 years says he wants out, I think that's too soon. I think that's way too soon. But you've been there 5 years, Drapes, and you know if you can make it 10 years in the NBA, you've had a great career. So he was damn near halfway through what is probably a pretty average NBA lifespan for guys who are really above average players. I have absolutely no problem with him as long as he goes about it the right way. And to me, the right way is talking this out with your people.
Yeah.
before it goes
front
public.
Office
because don't let this get out on Twitter, because people are automatically assume that he's once out at some point. But if you're serious about it, you talk to your people first, and they will make some calls behind back channels
and
to see what your value is.
If you're in the position, you know the Celtics want him. You see what the Celtics have. Even if they have to trade a ton to get him, he comes here with, at the very least, Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and probably one of Tatum and Jaylen.
New Orleans wants both of those guys.
Drapes, but okay, maybe.
But
so,
hold on, Jason.
But still, if he's looking at his next 3 years there, yeah. I mean, is Boogie even going to be back next year?
Yes.
They're
going to cut the check for Boogie.
If he's Anthony this summer, he's like, listen, even if we have Boogie, are we on the right path? Maybe, but I wouldn't say, but maybe I can go to Boston with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and whatever else.
That's the problem.
And
the league has a serious problem with super teams. And the only way you can win.
That's not the Celtics' fault.
No, but the only way you can win is playing with two other All-Stars. And so, if you got an All-Star team in Golden State, an All-Star team in Boston, an All-Star team wherever LeBron is, you got 27 of the teams, you know.
But that's what the rules are. I mean, that's going to be.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the league's problem. The league is.
But that's
not going to
change.
You don't think so?
Not soon. Not until the next.
I think a harder salary cap.
Here's the
maybe.
Problem. Here's the problem. You look at it as a problem. The Lakers and Celtics had damn dynasties for decades.
No, I'm with you.
And so
I'm talking about the perception.
The league doesn't care about that because people actually like dynasties. They like big threes and big fours.
Orlando that. Tell Milwaukee, who's about to lose Giannis Antetokounmpo, because Giannis is the next guy that's going to walk.
I will tell them. I will gladly tell them that, because that is called keeping it real. Look around you, Orlando. That's real. That's real. And I'm not saying it's right, because I don't like it. I kind of like where talent is spread out. But I understand the way the league is built, the way this league has been built, it has been built on the backs of super teams. Forever
Davis,
in a day.
And that's why Anthony Davis won't do that. He won't do that because he's not going to be that guy. And I know you say he's going to, people will, forgive him for it, unlike Durant who jumped. But he's just going to play buddy ball. He's just going to join a ready-made superstar team.
But you just read it. He's clearly trending in that direction.
Before
he had the heels dug in deep,
absolutely.
I'm all about the N.O.P. It's all about us. I'm not going nowhere. And now he's like, I could kind of see it. His tune has changed dramatically.
It has changed. And this is the era of the NBA we live in where winning is really the most important thing. Barkley and those guys, they pursued winning, but it wasn't the only
thing.
And
that's the thing that today's players are frustrated about when they get backlash for some of the decisions they make. People complain that NBA players, you're so selfish. It's all
about
you.
The money
and to a certain extent it is, but they also want to win.
Yeah.
And they're positioning themselves as best they see fit to win. I mean, that's why a guy like Greg Monroe could easily sit on the end of that Phoenix bench and cash that check.
Right.
But he wants to be part of a winner.
And
that's why Durant bounces from a really good situation in Oklahoma City, where I thought they were the perfect example of a small to mid-major market using the draft to build themselves up, keeping those guys around and competing for a title. But he wanted out.
And you look at Anthony Davis, rewind it 5 years ago. You're New Orleans and you're Boston. Celtics are rebuilding. New Orleans is starting off with Anthony Davis. And look where they are now. I think he served his time. And if they can't rebuild.
Served his time.
If they can't. How many
coaches? He's 24, Jason.
Absolutely. But, Trapes, I'm saying that I agree with Sherrod. After 2 or 3 years, guys should not be like, I want to get out of here. You're never going to build it.
What's the magic number? Is it 5 years?
I think.
So you don't think. Has New Orleans improved?
No.
Yes, they have. Sherrod, they were in the 60s.
You're talking about
Boogie Cousins got hurt.
Are you talking about from the time he got to where they are now, or are you talking about just this year?
No, the last 2 or 3 years I'm talking about.
Because they
hit the reset button.
But
they made the playoffs a few years ago.
Think about that.
They needed to make a jump to where Minnesota is right now, and they haven't. They've
I think they're
the draft has been – they haven't drafted well. They haven't – I mean, they traded for Boogie.
What are you talking about? That, if you look at the what the Pelicans were doing this season, they were having a very good season.
They were looking
for seventh or eighth.
Drew Holiday was playing at a great level.
But, Grace, this is the thing, though. As good a season as they're having, and good is always relative, they're what? At best, maybe sixth best team in the West?
Right.
That's a good season.
Get in the East. You're number four in the East.
I'm a top five, top 10 at worst player.
So,
and
hold
the
on.
Best
Let me
my
ask.
Team can beat so, is like so, number six?
So is that what you're telling me? Number six in the West. So why wouldn't, you know.
5 years. That's like
no,
the best
no,
we are.
But,
we're
but,
number six
so
after
if,
5 years.
If I'm Dame Lillard, I'm demanding out. If I'm, you know, whoever.
If he want,
if I'm Dame Lillard. I'm out.
If I'm
Giannis Antetokounmpo, I'm getting out of there.
If I'm Dame Lillard, if I'm Giannis Antetokounmpo,
let me pull it up,
if yeah. I'm thinking about my future and playing on an elite team, yeah, that's
right.
Why Dame Lillard. That's why Dame Lillard just a couple weeks ago actually had a conversation,
had a meeting,
which
sit
is,
down with the ownership
because
yeah, yeah.
He wants to know where are we going. Because from where he stands, we ain't going nowhere. That's why you have those conversations. And if your front office can't give you the answers that you need to hear, should you
Sherrod.
Be looking? Absolutely, because this is your career. Your career, which, by the way, is what, at best, maybe, what, 14, 15 years? And that's an extended career. Realistically, you're looking at 10. And if you are at 5 or 6 right now, you've got, like, what, one presidency left in you?
But here's the thing.
Come
they
on.
They are 3 games behind Minnesota, who's the 4th seed.
Who's this?
So, the Pelicans.
Okay.
So, you're saying to me, Anthony Davis should be pissed off. Ownership's not getting it done. Managed, and they're 3 games out of home court in the first round. What are you talking about?
How close are they to being out of the playoffs altogether?
I got the numbers right here.
And how close are they? How much closer are the team like – I'm not just saying the Celtics because they're in the best position to trade from. How much closer are the Celtics to a championship than the Pelicans?
And
light years.
And Drapes, and that's my point. These players have a small shelf life of where they can be high-impact, difference-making players. That's what Kevin Garnett in his own
way. So, in other words, you're okay with all the stars being on 4 teams, five teams in the league.
I'm okay with guys who are stars. I'm okay with stars who give the teams that drafted them a chance. Give them like a 4 or 5 year window to put a team around me that we can win and we can be consistent with. Give that a chance. And if they can't do that in 5 years,
I
need to be open to leaving.
And I hope Anthony Davis comes here because, to me, he should be attracting some free agents to New Orleans. How much – nobody's knocking down the door to go to New Orleans.
You
want to
know why?
Drapes,
you want to know why? That team's not very good. Guys don't want – Drapes.
All right, let's move on.
New Orleans is a great city to hang out in. I love going to New Orleans. God knows I love going to New Orleans.
But
I wouldn't want to play for that team.
So this narrative that there are only 5 or 6 teams in the league that free agents want to go to.
And you get to cover one of them, Drapes, so be
happy. I know, but I'm saying, I feel like super teams, and of course we all love watching the Warriors and things like that, but I don't think it's good for the overall health.
It's not. Nobody's saying that.
Drapes, let me go
but
back.
That's reality.
I
that's
said,
the reality.
This is the reality. I don't like it, but this is the reality of the NBA, that super teams, that is what this league has been built upon. It's that cut and dry. I'm not saying that's right, but that is real. That is real. And Anthony Davis has every reason in the world to keep an eye out.
I'm going to wrap up this discussion. So
you go right
Kimball
ahead,
Walker, Drapes. Demand to get out of there.
Say that again?
Demand to get out of Charlotte. If I'm Kemba Walker.
They already put him on a trade block, so he's only
– Andre Drummond marches his way out of Detroit. Get on out of there.
They try to trade him. Keep going.
Let's go. We can go. I mean, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, jump ship.
But they had a run.
Drapes, it's not like they had their moment in the sun. It's not like they have – he has no experience. Anthony Davis has no experience at winning.
They made one playoff. No, but they were –
And they got swept.
I could argue before the Boogie injury, the Pelicans were the one team none of the top 4 teams in the West wanted to see. Pelicans against Minnesota in a series with Boogie healthy, you can't tell me you're definitely saying Minnesota's winning that series.
So
that's what I'm saying with Anthony Davis. The Pelicans were trending in the right direction.
Before Boogie got hurt. Back and look at the last 2 or 3 years, there was a point in the season where they were trending in the right direction and someone got hurt. Another season, someone got hurt. You know, the Celtics, they lost their top two, top three player, 5 minutes of the game. So I can't use the excuse that, oh, they had an injury, so now all of a sudden.
So you're saying, hold on. Are you really comparing Boogie to Gordon Hayward right now? Boogie, 60 games into the season, 55 games into the season.
Drapes.
28-12 or whatever he's
Drapes,
giving you.
You act as if they lost Boogie at the start of the season the way the
and
Celtics
And they're playing
did.
In the West. If New Orleans was in Drapes. The East – Bro, come
Most
on.
Most years, I would agree with you on the West thing, but last I checked, Eastern Conference teams have been spanking him with a regularity.
No, you're talking one-on-one matchups. We know the top of the West is better than the top of the East. Can we agree with that?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So, the West is a tougher conference.
There are 15 teams out West, and we're talking about Houston, Golden State.
Man, you hijacking this podcast.
What about
bro?
Phoenix?
Move on, man. You're hijacking.
Drapes, you act like they don't play Phoenix. You act like they don't play Memphis. You act like they don't play.
The Celtics Talk podcast is under hostage. We need help.
Quickly.
Stick them up.
All right. Kawhi Leonard.
Good player.
Kawhi Leonard. Go.
Good player. He's going to.
Is he
going to
play? Is he going to play this season? Though I don't think so.
I think he will. I think Popovich is one of the greatest coaches when it comes to what I like to call Jedi mind tricks. He's already put out there that Kawhi's not going to play. He doesn't think he's going to play. Which to me, I'm like, he's probably going to be back sooner than anyone thinks. Because I think that was his way of outing Kawhi, saying basically he's being soft. He's healthy enough to play, but I don't think he's going to come back and play.
Why
Translation,
is he mad at them?
I think he's too big of a bliggity biggity big to come back and play.
But there's something going on there.
Yeah. Oh, there is. There is. But, you know, there was something going on last year with LaMarcus Aldridge. And the something that was going on was Popovich was trying to turn him into something that he didn't want to be, a type of player he didn't want to be. With Kawhi, I don't know what's going on, but it's not good. It's not good, and it's taken a very, very good player, arguably the best two-way player in the game, to not want to play. I mean, because when you talk about a guy that's healthy enough to play and he chooses to sit out, you have the damage is so deep that not only does he not want to just bring it, he doesn't want to show up. He doesn't want to step foot on the floor. And to me, that's scary because we've all seen Kawhi play. When he wants to be engaged, he can lock you down.
Right.
Ask LeBron. LeBron know better than anybody how engaged he can be. And the fact that he doesn't – I mean, it's to the point where you feel as though – Kawhi's spirit to play has been sapped.
Right.
As he doesn't even have that going for him. And to me, it is one of the saddest stories that we have in the NBA right now. One of the best players is intentionally not playing because he doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to.
And
they have to figure that out this summer because if
he's
supermax the year after, and if they don't
– There's a team in the Northeast – named Boston Celtics, who will more than be happy
Come
to try
on,
to figure out a way.
Man. Now you want Kawhi and Anthony Davis.
No,
what are you talking about, Sherrod? What are you
Give
talking about?
They have to at least inquire and see what it takes.
Let's take a quick break, man. Check in with my guy, Brad Stevens. I had a chance to sit down with him to talk about the All-Star break.
Thanks for waiting, Brad.
And his baseball career. Let's listen to my interview with Brad. All right, Coach, welcome back. The All-Star break is over. Final 23 games of the season coming up. But before we look ahead, let's look back. How did you spend your break?
I went with my family to see my mom in South Florida. Got a chance to spend a couple of days there. And then, went over to the Red Sox for their first day of spring training, which was fun, being able to take Brady with me. But everything else, all those other hours of the day or minutes of the day were spent thinking about coming back and making sure we come back strong.
Are you being serious with me, Coach? Like, you really studying basketball during the break?
Yeah, you have to.
You have to.
I mean, you just can't.
You can't unplug and turn it off.
I mean, you take your time to spend, the appropriate time, especially with your kids and your wife and the family time. But I think, every day is you're preparing for Wednesday's practice. I think that's more important than anything else is kind of reestablishing a tone of who we want to be and how we are our best. You know, it's not just what all is going wrong. It's about how do we try to emulate the best version of ourselves more often than not.
now you guys are back. You mentioned the Red Sox trip. How did that come about? Did you call them up, hey, I want to stop by? Or
yeah,
and I know you
yeah,
spoke
I mean,
to
I've
the
gotten,
guys, too.
I've been lucky in this town, you know, made a lot of friends that are in all those different organizations. And so said we were going to be in the area and told some of their front office that I would probably stop by for the morning. They were really kind to us, gave us a great tour, showed us around. They had a lot going on. They had their team meeting with all their owners and their players and coaches and everybody else. And so, you know, and then after that, I got a chance to sit down with Alex for a little bit, meet some of his coaching staff, which was fun, and then, you know, watch them hit a little bit.
Right. I know, you know, the coaches are all close, you know, but now Alex is a new guy. Do you reach out to welcome him into the fraternity kind of?
Well, all I did when he first got here was tell the people that I knew over there, like, give him my cell if he needs anything, tell him to call me. But I also understand that there's a lot going on in your mind as you're taking that new job, you're moving, you're learning the new roster, you're learning the new group, et cetera. And so there's so much going on, you don't have time for every phone call or every visit. So I just gave him my cell, and if he wants to call, fine. If not, I totally understand. Okay. And you know, it's good that you get a chance to sit down with him. He's really impressive.
How much All-Star Weekend festivities did you get a chance to watch?
You know, I got a chance to watch a lot of them. I didn't watch the whole thing of every right. of every event. You know, I think the one thing that I thought was cool about All-Star Weekend versus last year was how you could tell there was a more seriousness to the game, right. and the NBA did a good job with that. I mean, the players recognized it. You know, Adam and his group recognized it, and they came together. And the draft, I think, was really helpful into, you know, creating a little bit of trash talk and a little bit of excitement leading into the event. And then I thought that the players, you know, it's never going to be a, you know, a playoff game or even a regular season game intensity wise, but it's certainly. You know, was fun to watch.
Allen, Kyrie, they've been there before. Jalen and Jason, their first time. How did they look to you in their Rising Stars?
Yeah, their game wasn't as fun to watch.
All the highlights and dunks, Coach?
There's a reason there's highlights and dunks. Right. That's one of the things at the All-Star game. There's still highlights and dunks, but I think that, you know, some of that's really fun. And most importantly, you want those guys to go out, enjoy it, meet people, spend time with people, learn from people, and at the same time, come back healthy. That's all that really matters. And you even heard LeBron say that on the air during the game. They want to compete. They want to make sure they're doing that, but we all want to come back to our teams healthy. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing. And for Jason and Jalen specifically, you know, my deal was I was glad they played on Friday so they could then move on and get a little bit of a break, because I do think that the younger you are, the more you'll benefit from these days.
When they go away like that, All-Star break, do you give the guys something to work on over the break?
We don't do that from a basketball standpoint. I mean, we're with them every day. In fact, I do my best. I don't, unless there's something that needs to be said, I don't communicate with anybody, because I think they hear my voice enough. And then it's, you know, it's kind of fresh when you get back a week later. But we give them all a guide of basically a wellness guide, and with hints and tips on not only nutrition, sleep, which are pretty standard to what they always are, but also conditioning while they're gone. You know, you can't just take a week when you're this level of athlete. Yeah. So making sure that they take the appropriate amount of time. A lot of the guys went to places where they were either accompanied by a trainer that could work with them, or they had access to a college in the area where they could go and meet all their training and physical needs, you know, especially the guys that were coming off injury.
Coach, back to baseball. Did you play growing up? Were you a baseball?
I played through my freshman year in high school. You know, I told those guys yesterday, like, one of the reasons why I probably was not the perfect speaker for a baseball team was I love basketball, And I played baseball as a kid. I really liked it, but I'd say that it waned a little. And my freshman year, I was playing for our high school team and had a decent year probably, but I played AAU on the weekends. And and I don't even remember if I was supposed to be playing or not, but I remember in the last weekend before the state baseball tournament, I sprained my ankle pretty good. And I had been a center fielder for our team and, was probably at that time as a freshman hitting low in the order, but I was reasonable, I guess. And then, so we were getting ready for the state tournament. And so that Monday, I really can't move all that well. So he has me pinch hit in the last inning, and I get a hit, I dribble one through to the outfield somehow and run to first, and I'm at first, and I go to lead off, and I get picked off my last play of my career in the state tournament. So that was probably a good sign that it was over,
right.
But it probably an even bigger sign that basketball was a lot more important. But yeah, I remember that well, but it was fun. I had a great time playing baseball. My dad coached me most of my life in baseball, which was a good memory. And, all my friends played, and yeah, I liked it.
Just think, without that sprained ankle, who knows? You might not be where you're at.
Yeah,
give up baseball, you focus fully on basketball.
Well, I think I feel more guilt for ending our season
right.
or for getting an out right. in a critical moment. I don't know if it was the last out or not. I've lost track of that time, but I do think that it wasn't a timely out.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
All right, Brad, thanks so much. Good stuff with the head coach, Brad Stevens-Sherrod. 23 games left to go. Are you ready, my friend? The Celtics say they're ready. They're going to turn it up another notch. I expect bigger things from you, too.
Listen. The Celtics, they're going to be well. They're going to do well. They've won at least 16 games each of the last 3 years after the break. I don't expect this year to be any different. Let's get ready for the playoffs. Let's go.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Make sure you subscribe on all your favorite podcasting apps. Also, leave a review. We will check you out next time on the Celtics Talk Podcast.